folk, acoustic, and Americana. Join me every other Saturday, the first and third of every month. My name is Mia. I'm host of Folk in A Minor, right here on WHFR Dearborn, the station making waves.
Take care, Grandma.
Okay, baby. Don't forget to let me know the second you get there.
Yes, ma'am.
My grandson always tells me I worry about him too much. And of course I do. I'm his grandma. Well, I was worried sick when he came home from Afghanistan. He came back wounded. It wasn't a wound you could see. It was a wound inside. Post-traumatic stress disorder. My T couldn't sleep. He was angry all the time. He felt like he didn't fit in anywhere. Then I heard about this group, Wounded Warrior Project. People helping warriors like T. So I figured who better to help my grandson than people who could understand what he'd been through. Now, I don't know what they do there, but my T is smiling again. So I figured they must be good people.
One out of every five warriors return from the battlefield with post-traumatic stress disorder. Help support them at WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Far from the city, where the Lorax roams free, is the home of the magical truffula trees. In a place you will love, with things you'll adore us, it's a magical spot. We call it the forest.
Everyone here needs the trees.
And who are you?
I'm the Lorax, guardian of the forest.
The forest is there for you to explore. So come once to see it, then come back lots more.
I just like hearing you say it.
Visit discovertheforest.org, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. And now it's time for our Tuesday Forum. Today is Dearborn Heights News and Views.
College gift cards are a great way to show your support for someone in your life who is seeking the skills necessary to fulfill their dreams. Available in values from $10 to $100, gift cards can be used towards payment of tuition, purchasing books and supplies, lab fees, or even a lunch at Skylight Cafe. Gift cards can be purchased at the campus bookstore or online at collegestore.hfcc.edu. College gift cards. What better way to encourage a student in your life than with an investment in their future?
Welcome to the Tuesday Forum, and our special show on the second Tuesday of most months is the Dearborn Heights News and Views program. And welcome to the show. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm station advisor here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we do cover, I will say, with no humility at all, local area news and a variety of opinions about education, city government, and everything that's going on in Dearborn and the surrounding area, which includes Dearborn Heights. And we do that on Fridays from 1 to 2 p.m. or from our website. We do have a podcast of that available, as there is also for this show, the Tuesday Forum, right after broadcast. You can listen to any of our Tuesday Forum or the journal shows. Just click on Talk Shows and select the one that you want under that. But in the studio, joining me today is the emergency manager and public information officer for the city of Dearborn Heights. And we're going to have a great interview with him about the wide variety of his responsibilities and how he gets it done, too. So welcome, Bob Ancrap.
Good morning, Jay. Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, you're very welcome. We don't want to take you have you here more than an hour, because there might be some emergencies coming up this afternoon that you'll have to deal with. This seems to be becoming more and more so. Before there was an emergency manager, and folks, remember, we're not talking about an emergency financial manager here.
Correct.
This is the manager of emergencies of either coming from nature or something that went wrong with our own infrastructure, things that we set up, like toxic waste spill of chemicals being delivered or something. So you're in charge of saving us from all those things. Is that right?
Well, we try. We certainly give it a try. It's kind of a humorous thing that you brought up with the emergency manager title, that the emergency manager title has been around for years and years, of course, but over the past few years, things have changed a little bit. So every time I say I'm an emergency manager from Dearborn Heights, people say, "Whoa, what happened to the city?" I said, "No, right. It's not like that. It's we like to define it as disaster preparedness."
Actually. Yeah, that seems even better. I like the preparedness idea too, because if you're properly prepared, then the disasters are not going to be quite as bad as otherwise. So I like that too, and also there's less confusion since there's so many EFMs around now in Michigan, and they seem to be proliferating both for public school systems as well as cities. So, I'm sure there's confusion about that. Tell us about your background, and then we'll get into the nature of your position with the city, because you're really wearing several hats.
Yes, indeed, I am. Enjoying all of them, too, by the way. But mm-hmm. Before we get into that, I just want to mention, you had talked about some recent activity coming up or soon to happen activity. Yes, indeed. Yeah. We've had a very busy, very robust storm season so far this year, with a lot of heavy storms. And certainly there's potential again this afternoon, tonight, and probably tomorrow for more. So when mm-hmm. we talk about the preparedness, I hope the listeners are going to be paying attention to that.
And we're doing the show live here in the WHFR studios at Henry Ford Community College. Today is July 9th. So this is not a pre-recorded show. So when Bob is talking about a potential emergency situation coming up, it's very relevant if you're listening to us live today on Tuesday, July the 9th. I see your resume. Thank you for bringing your laptop here and putting it up for me. You have been in this position since, at least you started with the city in 2005, and you have a background in what I call the telecommunication area, including public relations, academic and professional, as well as the emergency manager positions, as well as academic work in a degree from Eastern Michigan. So you know wherewith you speak, and you've had experience in the area, so you've had time to get things organized, if not totally ready for some of these eventualities. I guess it was after 2011 that 2001 that in particular, because of the terrorist threats, all of a sudden money started flowing from various federal and state entities about being ready for that kind of disaster preparedness. But in fact, perhaps that money flowing in was good, because it helped the other situations that had to be gotten ready for too.
Yes, indeed, very much so. In so many cases, it takes a tragedy to open people's eyes, and 9/11 certainly was one of those instances where it brought to light the need for preparedness and a coordinated response toward large-scale emergencies.
I just want to read down the list on the Dearborn Heights government website, which is, oh my gosh, it is ci.dearborn/heights.mi.us. Anyway, just use your search engine and type in Dearborn Heights. I think there's only one in the U.S., so you'll probably, or Dearborn Heights, Michigan, you'll get to the right one. But you may think of emergencies, and I just mentioned terrorism. People are like, well, that's sort of it, I guess, except for storms. Listen to this list, and there's actually files and suggestions you can download from the Dearborn Heights website on each of these categories, at least the basics anyway. Disaster psychology. I mean, that's obviously how to think and prepare yourself mentally, and how to not to, well, freak out in the event of a disaster, how to get more information.
Yes, very much so. Again, the disaster psychology also is something that really came to light as a result of 9/11. Not only for the victims themselves, but for also the responders. Again, when you're in an adverse situation like these folks were for such a long period of time, it does take a toll psychologically, certainly. And again, sadly, in some of these instances, quite frankly, some of the responders just haven't been able to handle it. There are some very deep-rooted psychological problems that came out as a result of their participation, and sadly, some of them went so far as to take their own lives. So again, disaster psychology is something that we didn't hear a lot about up till that point. Again, glad to see it's very much on the forefront.
Yeah, and it's always an issue. You have to treat it ongoing, I guess, in all your communications with both your responders and the community too.
Certainly.
First aid, of course. If someone has an injury, then how do people take care of that? Want to bring up CERT and that program, of course, extensively. Mm-hmm. Floods. Is there more floods in Dearborn Heights than Dearborn? We had some floods last night. We had some warnings about key roads here, like places of Southfield and Telegraph under bridges. You couldn't get through there for a while after the downpour yesterday evening.
Yes, indeed. We get our share of flooding situations. Of course, those folks who are familiar with Dearborn Heights understand that we have a body called Ecorse Creek that runs along the southern border of the city. Mm-hmm. That tends to fluctuate quite drastically with the heavy rains. Unfortunately, it is in an area that's somewhat low-lying. There are a number of homes out there, and we do get get flooding potential there.
That's part of the Rouge River
that is correct. Yes,
system.
Yes.
And of course, most people know that it seems like, well, actually recently I haven't heard that Outer Drive was closed. It's not Outer Drive. Hines Park Drive. That's intended as a floodplain, but I haven't actually heard that it's been flooded over recently, but I don't drive it.
Yeah, take a drive by there today. It's pretty wet up there today. But again, as you mentioned, that area is designed as a floodplain to relieve the residential and business areas in that region. The water runs off there, and quite frankly, floods over, no harm done.
I'm in an area in East Dearborn, just fickle fate that I bought this house. It's on a huge, the whole neighborhood is on a huge sand pile. I mean, it's actually, I don't know how it got there. It's like one of those dunes areas that were, of course, they put grass on top and so on. But boy, does the water go down. I mean, we don't get any flooding. The basements don't flood just because the basic natural area was primarily like a huge sand dune for that whole neighborhood. Now, I won't mention the name of it because you'll all rush to try to buy houses there. But, well, maybe you should. I'd like to sell mine for a profit. But it all depends on exactly how the system is set up. How are, as long as you're mentioning floods and there's more water to come this week, how are your storm sewers handling it?
They're coming along well. We were quite concerned last night, of course, around 4 or 5 o'clock. We just got an absolute deluge of rain.
Right.
I, of course, had my laptop with me. I was monitoring the levels of the creek, and they did go up quite rapidly. Fortunately, we had a few reports of homes basement flooding,
really?
Primarily sewer backups,
but
no water that we know of actually breached the outside as in a traditional flood.
Maybe your sewer system is a little bit newer, maybe not, than most of Dearborn, but Dearborn is going through, of course, a major project to build the sewer overflow project, and they decided to do it by actually going into many of the older neighborhoods and replacing the drains in those neighborhoods rather than going for an evaporation pool or some big separate tunnel area underground. They were trying to build one 21 feet across, and that didn't work out. And it's only like a $350 million project altogether, and it won't be done until 2030, so we're hoping the rains don't hit too heavy until then. But it's actually a good idea, is that that Mayor O'Reilly came up with the idea, and his people, is that since we've had these problems, we've got to replace a lot of the older sewer systems in these neighborhoods anyway. And, of course, people don't like it because their whole street they can't drive on for months, but it actually makes them bigger, and so that overflow and the chance of backup is even lessened. But most people don't realize how amazingly expensive these things have to be. So you just wait until you have to do it, I guess.
Incredibly expensive, and as you mentioned, it's a bit of an inconvenience when the streets are dug up. People like to see the infrastructure improvements, but again, they unfortunately just don't like to go through all the necessary steps that it takes.
Well, the other topics here, and I'll just read the list quick. We'll come back to the ones that you think are more important. And
sure.
I know preparedness, emergency preparedness is something you want to stress, and we'll talk about CERT, of course. But food and water in emergency, hazardous materials issues, driving in a disaster, family disaster supply kit, home fires, of course, fires in the home, always an important issue for to be concerned about, emergency-related contacts, how to get in touch with people like city government and first responders, storms and lightning, caring for pets during disasters. And actually that leads to apparently the American Society for Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. They have an animal preparedness website. How cool is that? That's too bad the animals can't read that and just get their info directly. Sheltering in place, smoke detectors and extinguishers, another topic. Other useful websites related to emergency preparedness, that's a great link. Safety around utilities and emergencies. Utilities like, you know, the electrical poles and maybe the gas lines even.
Correct.
Safety for seniors and residents with special needs. And there's two documents there. So a lot of things. This is on the, and last but not least, winter weather and storms. But now we're in the summer weather and storms, which is somewhat different. So a lot of information there, each a separate file of information that anyone, Dearborn Heights or Dearborn, can go to and either, I assume, they can download it or print it out. And I would think if you do that, folks, don't keep it to yourselves. Wouldn't you suggest that any of these things, you need to talk to have important discussions with the people in your family.
Right? Share it with your family members. Share it with your friends, right. Your coworkers. Again, we want to really stress the importance of preparedness. It takes so much of the problem out of larger scale incidents. If the people know what to expect, do a little research in the meantime, understanding mm-hmm. the hazards that can happen in this area, such right. as weather, and knowing what to do, what to expect, what the responders are going to do, and how they can make their lives a little easier, a little less disruptive by taking some basic steps.
We're speaking to Bob Enkrap, who is the emergency manager, not financial manager, disaster preparedness person, and the public information officer in Dearborn Heights. This is the Tuesday Forum on WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and this is the, which is usually or often on the second Tuesday of each month. It is our show, the Dearborn Heights News and Views. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm impressed with the way the community can be involved if they choose to with an organization called CERT, which I know we have in Dearborn, also Community Emergency Response Team. Tell us about the nature of that and what they do and how people can get involved.
Certainly, CERT program is a great program. It is a nationwide program. Dearborn Heights was one of the first communities here in Southeast Michigan to start up a CERT organization. It is, as you mentioned, a volunteer organization of folks who will go through roughly 20 to 24 hours of basic disaster preparedness and response training. Once they complete that training, these folks stay with us as an organized group to help out in the case of large-scale incidents, be it a storm or flooding, whatever the case is. Again, you have to understand they're lay people. They're not professional responders. Mm-hmm. They're not there to take the role of the professional responders. But they are kind of the extra hands, eyes, and ears for the professional responders.
Yep. Who teaches this course in Dearborn Heights, and how often do you offer it?
We usually offer it twice a year. Mm-hmm. First came in the fall, and then also sometime midwinter.
24 hours of instruction, is it over several weeks?
In each community has different ways of handling it. In Dearborn Heights, we tend to stick with the old school. We like to go 9 weeks of nine weekly evening meetings where we can dedicate 2 or 3 hours to a full topic, and then the following week we move on to the next topic.
Okay? Is there homework?
Not homework.
I bet there's printed materials, manuals,
there certainly is,
reference
yes,
materials.
Yes, absolutely. Uh-huh. And of course, we encourage our members, our students, if you will, to go through that information and kind of prepare for the coming week's class. Okay. Those classes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going to ask, is CPR part of that? That is the life support situation. When somebody has a heart attack, they're not breathing, and so it's like breathing into their body, trying to get their heart to start again. That usually takes a little more specialized instruction.
Yes, indeed it does. That is not part of the CERT curriculum as recommended through the national organization. However, okay. we do make that training available, CPR and AED.
I think we do here at Henry Ford Community College, too, in a separate course.
Yeah.
In our HPE department, but not the emergency manager class, which I know our police department has. So mm-hmm. do you teach that class yourself or
I teach a number of the classes myself. Mm-hmm. You have to go through a certification process, so called train the trainer. Okay? And, of course, I did that very early on. But mm-hmm. we also like to get the folks who are actually hands-on. Again, when we talk about a class on fire safety, we get one of our fire guys to do it.
Right.
When we talk about the terrorism stuff, we get one of our police officers, and so on and so forth. So Perfect. We like to get the actual hands-on experts who are really up-to-date with what's going on in that part of the industry, if you will.
Yeah, is there a cost to
there is not a cost.
Of Dearborn Heights?
No, absolutely right. no cost. Right. It's a great program. We've got about 80 members who have gone through the program right now. Mm-hmm. The vast majority of them are still very active. And the really neat thing about it, Jay, is the fact that these folks are there simply to help make the community a better place. There aren't any egos involved. There aren't a lot of ulterior motives, things of that nature. They're just there to do some good stuff for the community. So right. So my hat's off to these folks. Yeah. Just a good bunch to work
I would
with.
Think at least one key person in every family group or in your neighborhood, a person from your neighborhood association or on your block, that people should look for volunteers in their area too to help coordinate. It sounds like something that really everybody, if they had the time, as they say, should have that direct knowledge and information. But it's also a matter of getting enough people in each area to sort of spread the word and coordinate it too.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things we're starting to see the benefits of right now. We've got that base core of members. Now those folks are branching out and bringing in, mm-hmm. again, their family members, their friends, their coworkers. So we're starting to reap some benefits from that, which is really good.
Again, this we're talking about CERT, which is the Community Emergency Response Team. And we do have those classes. We do have coordination in Dearborn. As Bob said, it's a nationally coordinated kind of program, and in Dearborn it's the fire department. I'm sure just go to cityofdearborn.org and search for CERT, and it'll pop right up.
Or look up Brad Smith, who is their emergency management coordinator for Dearborn.
One of your many jobs, do you help coordinate the website, too, for City of Dearborn, Bob?
Not Dearborn. I work on
Dearborn Heights.
I do work on parts of Dearborn Heights, yes.
Oh, because I couldn't find a search engine anywhere. I mean, a place where you could search for a keyword.
I'll bring that up. That's a good point.
Maybe it just wasn't. I mean, it was all the way down. I didn't scroll far enough or something. But I didn't see a way to search for a topic or like your name. Even that would be important to find.
That's interesting. A good point. I'll check that out. Just, thank you.
Information oriented here.
Yeah.
I think you've described CERT and its content really well. Again.
Basically, mm-hmm. if I can add one more thing,
sure,
the premise behind the CERT program is, again, we're training as many people as we can to take an immediate role. Again, good example, if a storm hits, if it is an incredibly severe storm, the professional responders may not be able to get to some of these neighborhoods right away. As you know, unfortunate reality, budget restraints are hitting right now. Our numbers of professional responders nationwide are dwindling. We've had cutbacks. Again, that has really taxed the role of some of these professional responders. Again, if there is a large-scale event, we have some trained people in the neighborhoods. They can't do a lot of the heavy lifting, but they can band together and start doing some preliminary response work as lay people until the professional responders get there.
And I see here, too, that there is, of course, ways that I'm sure maybe by email, certainly frequently, that the city, either your office or police or fire can keep in touch with the CERT people. And there's even refresher classes quarterly, it says. That would be four times a year. And even drills, it says one evening per quarter to keep their skills up to date. Because things do change and procedures change or facilities change sometimes.
Exactly. And, of course, like most most knowledge bases, if you don't use it, if you don't exercise it, you're going to get rusty. Mm-hmm. So again, we like to keep that training in the forefront so the people can understand that this is almost kind of a reflex on what you have to do.
Can the people that graduate from this, do they get a free CERT T-shirt?
Well,
or do you hand out vests at emergencies so people know that these people actually are part of the team, though volunteers?
Yeah, we outfit our members, like Dearborn and all other communities, with a backpack of basic safety materials.
Okay? Cool.
They will get a bright vest, so they're very easily identified out in the field. And they get a hard hat, and in their backpack of supplies, you find things like a good quality flashlight and a multi-tool, face masks to protect from dust.
Well, that's a reason to take the class by itself. No, it isn't. No, you better be ready to help folks if they need you, and you've gone through the class, the city is depending on you. Can you... I guess you can never have enough insert? I mean, there's only so many you can train at once, but...
We're glad to have as many people come through the training as would like to. We'd love to see 1,000 people come through for the training. But the thing is, you know, some of these folks will go through this 9-week course of disaster preparedness. And fortunately, the majority of them will say, yes, I want to become a full-time member of the CERT program, and I'll help with the response. And that's great. However, there are folks who say, man, you know, I enjoyed the class. The response part of it just isn't for me. And we say, hallelujah, we're glad you went through the class. They've got some good education.
Right. The information alone, even if they can't actively promise to volunteer, is still extremely valuable because at a certain point they will share it with others, or at least they know what to do if situations come. So that's CERT, folks, CERT. And who should people contact about that class?
They can contact
in Dearborn Heights.
They can contact me directly. I work out of the Dearborn Heights Police Department, and my phone number is 313-277-7405.
We'll give that again. Later. Don't worry.
Okay, great. Yes. And also, they can check the Dearborn Heights website under the emergency procedures, and there is a page there for the CERT program.
And it's got your email there as well as that phone number. Bob's last name is Ankrapp. So, but we'll give that information again before the end of the show. Okay. I wanted to, we've got about 5 minutes before our half hour break, and we'll come back to some of the specific emergency preparedness issues. And we hope our listeners, to our Tuesday forum here, Dearborn Heights News and Views this week, will get out a pencil and paper, maybe. Or if you're listening to the podcast, you know, the MP3 can be easily, run backwards, and you can re-cue it if you miss something. So MP3 is a way to take notes in these things, too. But tell us about, first of all, then to cover your job with the Public Information Office, because that has many, many aspects to it, too. It's not just writing press releases for the mayor.
Indeed. I handle pretty much all the communications, public relations for the city of Dearborn Heights, in addition to my emergency management responsibilities. That includes, as you mentioned, press releases. I handle all the photography work for the city. When you see photos in the paper of events around Dearborn Heights, probably it's one that I shot at one time. Shot by Bob, yes.
Okay.
And then in addition to that, of course, I oversee the our cable TV operations, WDHT, which is a local origination station. The Dearborn Heights Today newsletter is one of my projects. I handle that as well. So, again, it's a pretty robust program. It keeps me off the streets, I guess.
And of course, there's news articles and some upcoming events on the website, but you have a web person to do the physical manipulation of that.
Well, we handle it a little bit differently in Dearborn Heights, where each department head will take responsibility for their own respective areas.
Okay.
I handle the news section. I handle the emergency response section. So, again, it's the responsibilities are divided up quite nicely, so no one is really saddled with a lot of information needs.
Well, I think it's a better program, and there's actually more shows that you originate each week in terms of cable television than Dearborn and the big-time city of Dearborn. And you call it WDHT, but it is your cable channel. Which channel number in Dearborn Heights? Is it more than one system out there?
Yes, indeed. It is. Let's see. Let me think about that for a second. With Comcast, it's channel 12.
Okay.
WOW, it is channel 10. And AT&T, go to channel 99, and there's a drop-down menu. You can select one of several different cities.
I see.
But we hope you'll watch Dearborn Heights.
Right. And is there always something there? Do you repeat shows?
We do repeat shows. Typically, our shows will air, maybe 9 o'clock and 3 o'clock, which would be 9 a.m., 3 p.m., 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. So it'll run four times a day.
That's pretty consistent. I know Dearborn, of course, does have a cable channel on one system. Maybe not both, WOW and Comcast. And I don't know about AT&T and Dearborn offhand, but it seems like whenever they put a show on there, I can never predict what time it's going to be. And it rotates frequently, but you can never guess at like when they might start. And I guess in between the shows, there must be sort of a bulletin board of upcoming events and schedules. That but I never, you know, as people scan the dial up and down, I never find out what that is. So.
Yes, we do indeed use the bulletin board concept. However, we're supplementing that now with more public service announcement type programming in there as well.
I would think, shows. And I may be wrong, the website doesn't list a schedule for your TV shows, does it?
Soon to. We made some revisions on the schedule, and we will be getting at it.
That would really be good, because a lot of people who are on the web, it would be easy for them, well, let me see what's going to be on tonight, because they may just not catch that, you know, that local access channel when the bulletin board is up.
Yeah, for folks who are interested in our programming, we do have a Facebook page.
Okay, what is that?
It's under WDHT.
Okay, so it's facebook.com/WDHT.
That is correct, yes.
Okay.
And, again, cool. It's a good operation. I think I'm a little biased, of course, but it's a busy operation. We have two part-time guys, Stan, who is our technical guy, and Dennis, who just joined us a few months ago. Of course, you know Dennis quite well from
he's our WHFR news director. As a matter of fact, we all need as many part-timers who have skills like Dennis as we can get.
Yeah. So between the two guys, we're doing, I think, six or seven local origination programs right now. Mm-hmm. And we're particularly excited because we kind of blew the dust off a program we tried a few years ago, and it didn't last too long. But we've got some great leads right now for the show called Overcoming Disabilities. Hmm. As far as I know, it's the only one in the state that is dedicated to this type of programming, highlighting how people are overcoming various physical or psychological barriers.
Sure.
So I would encourage everyone to take a good look at that program. It's going to be a good one. We're quite excited about it.
Anything planned for the election season? I think you have a couple of, is it two council seats open for November?
Correct. Yes, we don't have any specific plans in place yet, but I anticipate we will be doing some candidate forums with the
League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights. Yes. Yeah, certainly if they do a forum, and I suppose they would have a separate one for Dearborn Heights from Dearborn, but Dearborn, we've got like 21 candidates that'll be.
Yeah, jump in, hang on tight with that.
Well, we got five mayoral candidates, and we've got 21 for seven slots of the city council, which after August 6th, will be down to 14. And we're doing as much as we can on the WHFR Journal over the next few weeks and September through late October, of course, to try to get the word out about at least the challengers, because I always feel sorry for the challengers. They have less money. They may be great people with great experience, and because they don't have name recognition right now, the incumbents are almost always favored. Now, this is not. I'm not putting down the incumbents or their years of service, folks, but I'm just saying they automatically are somewhat known to you. And if you haven't done a lot of research, and sometimes it's very hard to find out about these new people, then you can't make, I think, a fair judgment as to who deserves your vote. Constant problem with our system, but since we have limited time, we're not interviewing the incumbents here. We often talk to incumbents in the rest of the time, but not during the election season. But there's so many challengers. So I do give a lot of credit to the League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, and their website is just the first initial of most of their names. So it's League W. So it's LWVDDH. .org.
Yes, and they do just a yeoman's task in kind of leveling the field for all the candidates, both incumbents and challengers.
They have a lot of volunteers, even men, folks. Yes. So it's a great community civic organization, especially in election time, but other times of the year, too. A lot of former people from the Dearborn School Board, I know, are on there, and city council candidates have decided to volunteer in that group, and very active, and they do great things, and hopefully they'll help out the cities in organizing some nice candidate debates, too, as we go ahead. We're going to take a brief break on the Dearborn Heights News and Views Show, live in the studios, July 9th here. We'll be back with in just 2 minutes with some disaster preparedness tips from Bob Ancrap of the city of Dearborn Heights.
Packers.
Vikings.
Red State.
Blue State.
We come from different places.
Uptown.
Downtown.
We come to different conclusions.
Half empty.
Half full.
But no matter how different we are, we're all connected, and we can all make a difference. That's why United Way brings people, expertise, and resources together to improve the education, income, and health of our communities. The building blocks for a better life. When we live united, our efforts, magnified by others, add up to real change. Children succeed in school, families gain financial stability, the health of our neighbors improves, and suddenly, so do our communities. But real change won't happen without you.
Live united.
So let's look beyond our differences.
Live united.
One by one, let's make a difference. Let's reach out a hand to one and influence the condition of all.
Live united.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Sign up today at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
It's that time of year. Time to register at Henry Ford Community College for the 2013 fall semester. Most of the classes that you will take at Henry Ford Community College will transfer to major four-year institutions in the area. Also, HFCC has some of the lowest tuition rates around. First-time students can go to the Welcome Center on campus. Call 800-585-HFCC or go to the web at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Fall semester starts August 22nd, so register today to get the best choice for classes. See you there.
Dig deeper. Local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area on the new WHFR Journal every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. and anytime as a podcast from WHFR.fm. Join our WHFR news team as we dig deeper, making waves. So we're back live in the studio, and the weather report right now for July 9th is it's not raining yet, so let's not go crazy screaming in the streets.
It's early yet.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, never know. 15 minutes, they say, in Michigan,
that's
you know,
right. There you go.
The weather will change, and not necessarily for the better. We're talking to Bob Ancrap, who is the emergency manager and public information officer, but he likes to think of emergency manager as more proactive way, which is disaster preparedness, and I'm all for that, of course. And so that's what we're going to get into right now. We did talk about CERT, how people can in the community can volunteer to take the class, learn great things, get a CRT vest or T-shirt or something. I'm being facetious. That's not the important part of it. And help in the community if they choose to, ongoing, to be a coordinator in your area, or for at least your family anyway. Okay, so what would you suggest in terms of, and I'm not in no particular order here unless you want to suggest one, Bob, and I hate to start with the most important first because it'll just trickle down to nothing at the end, so it's probably better to be random in my list here. With all the rain and the flooding, any particular thing people should keep in mind about that? Because that might be coming up today.
Well, yeah, with storms, and again, if we can backtrack just a little bit. We talked about a host of different types of disasters and incidents that could happen. We define a lot of these as an all-hazards approach toward disasters. In other words, a lot of the steps you will take to address one of these areas will certainly be applicable in other areas as well. A lot of common denominators there toward your preparedness and your response activities. Okay, so again, keep that all-hazards approach.
Okay, well, I'm going to back off here because I'm just thinking back to when I was a young boy in the 1950s in Detroit, and if there was a big snowstorm, and we'd never had much warning, or a big rainstorm, people wouldn't freak out. They just said, wow, it's really snowing. Wow, it's really raining. There was actually, I think, less fear and panic about what today we call extreme weather than then. And the only thing I remember that we used to get a little bit freaked out about was tornadoes. And I believe in the 50s that the Detroit area, or at least the western Detroit suburbs, we got hit literally by tornadoes. And that hasn't happened in a long time close to Detroit. And I think Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti had a couple problems with touchdowns in the last couple of years. So in a way, I just want to say as a cautionary note here, a lot of these things that are called extreme weather, or emergency disasters, or severe weather, even on commercial media, I think it's oversold. Nothing wrong with being careful, but a lot of these things will make people panic and freak out and drive like crazy. Or just, I mean, there's an overreaction possible. Unfortunately, you've got to fight against that.
Kind of the hype factor, if you will.
Yeah, right.
And unfortunately, our colleagues in the media, on the commercial side, certainly if...
We're non-commercial media, folks. Non-commercial. We don't care about ratings. Well, we do, but we don't get them, and therefore... We're trying to tell you just the truth as we know it and without trying to make money on it.
Yeah, but the sensationalism does sell, which is an unfortunate part of it. However, that having been said, again, the technology that has come up since we were kids, way back in the old days, the processes, the technologies have become so much more sophisticated. They are able to track these types of things several days in advance, which is great, particularly when there truly is a severe event, the potential for a severe event coming up.
Uh-huh.
Again, forewarned is forearmed, of course. So again, yes, indeed, we do see a good bit of hype with this type of stuff. We want folks to take a common sense approach toward preparing for it. Don't fall into the hype. Don't fall for people screaming wolf when there's just kind of a garden variety thunderstorm. But that having been said, there are certain common sense types of steps you need to take in the event of a garden variety thunderstorm. Things such as stay the heck away from the lightning. If you see lightning, get inside or get inside a shelter. Again, if there is flooding, even minor flooding, there are things you have to do. Number one, for God's sake, keep your kids out of the water. With street flooding, what you're seeing are the sewer waters bubbling up out of the manhole covers. It's just not the kind of stuff you want to play in. You know, back when I was a kid, we lived on a farm, and the fields would flood. Okay, that's not quite so bad. We didn't have sewers backing up into the fields. Again, some of the water that bubbles up out of this stuff is just horrendous, and is not to be played in. Okay, also, certainly, don't walk through storm waters if you don't have to. Typically, the storm waters, when the streets flood, will not be crystal clear water like you're walking through a foot of water down in the Bahamas. You probably can't see the ground. Unfortunate reality is a lot of cases, the manhole covers will blow off. They'll become dislodged because of the force of the water coming up. You can't see where you're walking, and unfortunate reality is some folks have been walking through the water, and all of a sudden they find themselves 15 feet down a hole.
What about lightning coming from storms? Now, of course, there's something called heat lightning where the strike doesn't actually get to the ground and cause, I don't think, any damage. But in the 50s, boy, we really got the fear and scare from parents and be careful of lightning. Of course, don't stand in water outside and don't stand under trees. And that's probably still important. Is lightning statistically still as much a threat as boy, it really was stressed a lot to me in the 50s.
Well, lightning strikes are a relatively rare phenomenon. Okay. Again, nonetheless, they are highly unpredictable. Mm-hmm. They are highly dangerous. Unfortunately, not a lot of the folks who are struck with lightning will be around to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, tremendous force, and again, the unpredictability of it is the tough thing. Rule of thumb is: if you can hear thunder, if you can see the lightning off in the distance, you're probably within striking distance of it.
I know my dad survived. He was, of all things, he was washing our car in our garage during a thunderstorm with lightning in Detroit in the 1950s. And somehow, and I think it was probably just a stray spark or bolt, but it came through the window of the garage, which was closed and hit him because he was standing in water, okay, and full of water all over him because he was washing down the car with, you know, rags and that. And he did get a sizable burn on an arm, but I guess he was very lucky. And he stopped washing the car in the garage in the storm from yep. then on.
and again, that's one of the nice things. You just a little common sense approach. If you hear the thunder, if you see the lightning, get in where there's some shelter and make yourself a little bit more safe.
You were mentioning the puddles and pools in the street just Sunday night. Okay, I wasn't driving, but I was pushing a cart, a hand cart, coming out of Concert of Colors with all our WHFR equipment. And, you know, it had rained almost every day. It's rained, torrential rains. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I was going over a wet spot. And, oh, my gosh, it turns out it was a hole in the concrete. And so the cart wheel went down and boxes fell off. That can happen in a city street, too. What you might think is just a puddle or a pool, maybe you shouldn't try to drive directly through it. If you don't want to suddenly swerve and smash into another car or something, yep. but you should try to avoid the puddles because they may actually mask some hazard in the road, even if it's not a crack in the street or a hole in the road. It could actually be covering up, I don't know, somebody's muffler or tailpipe that
Certainly,
happened to
yeah.
fall in there. So you should try to avoid big patches of water in the street and go a little slower. I don't know too many cars that flood out now from going too fast through a puddle, but it can still happen.
It certainly can happen. Yeah, no question about that. And again, as you're driving up to a body of water, you have to understand that you're probably not going to be able to judge or to determine how deep that is. And we see that on the news, unfortunately, on a very regular basis. Cars getting washed down a gully or something of that nature. Now, fortunately, with the city streets, we don't see things quite that severe here. But nonetheless, the hazard is there. If the water is too deep, it can be a problem.
We're talking to Joe Ankrap, who is the emergency manager and the public information officer for Dearborn Heights, the city of Dearborn Heights, today on the Tuesday Journal, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. My name is Jay Koronik. I'm glad you're with us because this is important stuff. Tornadoes? Is that that's usually on people's minds this time of year, too?
Certainly.
Always confused. When we hear on the media, and the media, of course, covers these extensively, tornado warning, tornado alert, what's the difference?
Okay, a tornado watch.
Watch.
Yeah, would be the weather conditions are such that a tornado could form.
Okay.
Okay, so
you're just watching.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Be aware of your surroundings.
You may be watching nothing right now, yeah. but you just know that it's possible.
And
very more possible than usual.
And certainly pay attention to those warnings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Secondly, a little more severe with the tornado warning means a tornado has actually either been spotted or the radar signature indicates that a tornado is
identified
forming or has formed.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes they're even more specific with the warnings. They might say it's on course to be in a certain city in like half an hour or whatever. Of course, it could change. And, of course, some tornado spouts, if they do touch down, sometimes they're like jumpers. They bounce around. So they come up and down and up and down. And
quite unpredictable, again, like the lightning. And we talked a little earlier about the level of sophistication with the forecasting services.
Mm-hmm.
This is one place the National Weather Service has really done a good job. They can really target things now specifically. It used to be when a warning was issued, it would be for the entire county. Countywide basis. Well, again, in a situation like Wayne County, that's a long stretch from 8 Mile all the way down downriver, actually. So again, they've gotten much more sophisticated now, and they can target specific areas and specific communities even to be on the lookout for type things.
Mm-hmm.
So again, those technological advancements really are benefiting.
Now, people can also, of course, if they have smartphones or their computers, there are several websites, different kinds of apps, as they're called, that you can download often for free to actually track severe weather. I'm not sure what color on my map a tornado would be, but I know it goes from like gray to green, which means maybe light rain, to yellow, red, and red is really, like last night, what hit was red color over Dearborn when it was flooded. So that's helpful, I think, to have, too. I'm not sure what color a tornado is, but they move so fast, I'm not sure it would respond in an app all that quickly.
There are a number of text-based services out there as well. As a matter of fact, I have one on my cell phone. Again, when my phone starts vibrating in this type of weather, you check it out, and it will actually say a tornado warning has been issued for a certain area. So again, in addition to the maps, there are some really good text-based services out there, and there are a bunch of them.
Doesn't hurt to have that. So in my experience, as I said, in 1950s and early 60s with my parents in the western Detroit suburbs, we had tornado warnings. We had things hit close to our house even. A jumper went through the neighborhood, and even the house next door was pulled off its foundation just like an inch or so and let drop back down. But that was right next door. Mm-hmm. We couldn't see it coming because it was like raining. And most tornadoes don't have rain preceding them or at the same time.
It's going to vary.
Because there was no way to tell that this was coming. The other one I remember here in Dearborn was the 70s. The sky literally turned green, and I don't know how that happens.
I
don't know how it happens, but it was 74, 76, and oh my gosh, we had all the warnings, tornado warnings, but you could tell there was something wrong outside, And if you're in the house and you either you think you spot a tornado or you got a warning that says, coming to Dearborn, take cover, 20 minutes, or where do you go in the house?
Go to the lowest. Go to the lowest location in the house that you possibly can. If you have a basement, certainly get in the basement.
They used to say basement southeast corner. I'm not sure why. Is that because the winds usually go counterclockwise?
It's an old old adage. It goes back
southwest corner.
Southwest, yeah, because it's coming out of the direction of the storm. I obviously plays a role in that. But again, a couple very important things to remember: get in the lowest area of the house
as possible
can. Mm-hmm. If you can get under something very sturdy. Even better yet, in that lowest area. Okay, if you don't have a basement, again, get in an area where there are a lot of supporting walls, such as a bathroom. Relatively confined space. You can actually get in the bathtub and pull something over you, maybe a mattress or something that will help protect.
I've seen that in movies. In fact, there was some TV show. Somebody escaped a bomb by jumping in the bathtub at the last second. But the bomb wasn't in the bathroom. But still, there in the bathroom. Yeah. But still, very protective.
The reality is with storms like that and tornadoes, contrary to what you see in the Hollywood movies, the majority of the injuries and deaths don't come from people getting sucked up and carried away in the storm. The injuries and deaths come from getting hit by debris. And again, some of this debris can be going several hundred miles an hour when it hits you. Yeah. So it's a very significant thing. So if you can get in an area such as a bathtub that's going to help protect you, your chances are going to be better.
Yeah, this is very facetious, but folks, it's not a free ticket to Oz. Okay, don't stand out. I want to be Dorothy.
That's right. For heaven's sake,
you're not going to survive it if it hits you.
One of the things that I stress is when you get a severe storm warning, and again, the warnings and watches for thunderstorms are the same as the tornado warnings. The watch means there's a good chance the warning means one's actually in place and it's coming. When you get those, it's not the time to be standing in front of a picture window to see how dark it's getting or how bad the storm is.
Another couple of myths on that was, should you open all the windows in your house so that the low pressure area coming over is easily gets out? The last I've read, and who knows, there's always conflicting information about things. Don't open the windows.
No, that's
because something might blow in and hit you. Maybe the window. There's a lot of stuff blowing around outside, like tree branches and that. And maybe it's better to have the protection.
Again, rule of thumb is if a tornado were going to be that close to your house, you're probably not going to have too many windows left anyway.
Right.
So.
Also, another thing I just read recently, they tried to say that if you're outside, let's say you're on a bicycle or on a road or a motorcycle or something, a lot of people in the olden days used to say, get under a bridge. Well, I guess it depends on the kind of bridge. That warning said, don't get under the bridge. That's no protection, maybe because bridges are usually quite tall and the wind can sweep right through there. They say, still, if there's a low area like a ditch or something, get literally in the ditch. Although if there's a flash flood coming, maybe that's not a good idea either.
Yeah.
Like a culvert or something, if it turns out to be a rainwater culvert, you're going to drown there. But it's kind of interesting that the low area, even outside, is more protective than... let's say the typical bridge actually is kind of tall, and the winds can just swoop right through.
Well, exactly, so. And as I mentioned a little earlier, one of the big hazards with significant wind events is the blowing around of debris. And unfortunately, if you're under an overpass or something of that nature, sure, you may be shielded from the rain. However, you're still a target for that debris. And again, as you mentioned a little earlier, the construction of that could be such that it actually will help intensify the velocity of the wind and the debris coming through there, so you could be a real target for that.
Well, there's many suggestions that people can get from the Dearborn Heights website about emergency procedures and emergency preparedness, and we can't go down all of them in the show, but I was just I thought maybe we would conclude in the last couple of minutes. Maybe you could run down what you would suggest should be in a family's disaster preparedness kit. That is, I mean, obviously, if the electricity and or the gas coming through the gas lines goes out, what sort of supplies, food perhaps, that doesn't spoil, for how many days, how much water would you recommend would be kind of basic for a small family?
Well, generally... The family emergency kits are known also as 72-hour kits. Mm. Basically, what we like to do is encourage people to have enough supplies ready that would get them through for 3 days. Okay. That would be 3 days, if you will, of total isolation. You won't have help from emergency responders. You won't be able to get out and buy anything, some things of that nature. So, again, total self-sufficiency for 3 days. Number one, certainly some water. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you can go to Sam's Club or Costco or Kroger or any place and buy a case of water for a few bucks now. So again, critically important to have a few cases of water. You don't need to store 1,000 gallons. But, again, have a few cases of water on hand that you'll be able to drink. Okay. Mm-hmm. Of course, there are certainly other resources there, too. Your hot water heater carries several gallons of drinkable water. So, again, there are opportunities there. Very important, obviously, non-perishable foods. Okay, you want to have some staples. Keep in mind, you probably won't be able to cook it. A small camp stove is a nice thing to have in your basement. So, so again, if you want to open up that can of spaghetti, you can at least warm it up on a propane burner or something of that nature.
Of course, you don't want to cook it in your basement.
No, don't cook it in the basement. But nonetheless,
some people are always cooking indoors.
No, good point.
If it stops raining, you can put it on your patio.
There you go. But anyway, non-perishable foods are very important. Something that a lot of folks don't remember is medication. You should really have extra prescriptions on hand. Again, you don't need a pharmacy full of them, but again, just have a little extra stock of your pharmacy.
I mean, products. Yeah, if like a tornado, a tree fell on your house, or there was a personal injury, even without a disaster, somebody falls off of the bike, you need bandages, you need antiseptic, you need...
Good quality first aid kit.
Right.
It is very important. No question about that. Okay.
What else?
Let's see. Just trying to think offhand very quickly. Lighting supplies, right. Flashlights, and lots of batteries. You know, back several years ago when we had the blackout in this area, good Lord, how many people ran off to get their flashlights and found out the batteries were dead. Unfortunately, being an emergency manager, the same thing happened in my house. So it does happen. So, again, you need a lot of lighting. You need a lot of extra batteries. Keep those fresh.
And ways to communicate in case even the phone lines goes down, because a lot of people don't realize that their home phone is actually powered by electricity, because most people have cordless phones these days in their house. They pick up the handset. I'm not talking about cell phones. And so when the electrical power goes down, their home standard phone, because it's a cordless handset, has no power, so it goes out. Their cell phones may go down because the cell towers usually get overloaded with calls, first of all, emergency calls, and can't handle it, or they lose power too sometimes.
One of the things, and I'm not putting a plug in here for the phone companies, but one of the things I do promote to our CERT members is if you have that old-fashioned phone on the wall that's connected to a wire, if you got it, don't get rid of it, because again, that is probably your most dependable communications. That will be the last thing to go down.
Well, I'm going to make a plug. You plugged AT&T. I'll make a plug for, and we're not talking about commercials here, folks, but for, well, first of all, for self-powered flashlights and radios. Radio's the big plug.
Yes, that was
but
next.
You can actually, I have one of these little guys, and they don't need batteries. You just, it's human power. You've got to turn the crank maybe 20, 30, or 100 times, but they will go for long period for either receiving radio signals or be a flashlight. Actually, I have one that's two-in-one. It either has a little flashlight on it or it has that, and I don't know how many cranks it'll last, but might last beyond the potential battery supply. That's always helpful. And radio, remember, there will be some stations on the air. For example, in 2003 or 2004, when we had like 4 days without power in Detroit here, WHFR, and who knows why, Henry Ford Community College, we got power back up in like 20 hours, whereas in East Dearborn, my house had no power for 4 days. And then I called the electric company and said, how's it going, in the fourth day, and they said, oh, we didn't know you didn't have any power. Nobody called us from your neighborhood. I said, well, could you work on it? Anyway, always call the appropriate people down power lines or
absolutely.
Whatever and sparking is going on. Call DTE. They have an emergency line.
Very, very important aspect. If you are in an area where there are down power lines, please stay away from them. Keep a good distance because, again, you don't want to stand even too close because that current actually travels through wet ground, and it can cause some significant problems.
I'm going on record here, but I've already told the Dearborn Police Department, if we have power, we'll be glad to do emergency broadcast messages specifically for Dearborn and Dearborn Heights.
That's
those
great.
Are the two strongest major communities in our area and other communities, too. We were trying to get a grant for some federal money for a solar power generator, but so that we had that fell through anyway. But we will be here and do local announcements all the time if needed, just for Dearborn Heights, if that happens and if somehow we have power. Keep tuned to all your local stations and a little AM/FM station. I was surprised in 2004 a lot of commercial stations were off the air for a while.
Yeah.
They forgot to have a generator even. And then they found their generator didn't work.
Unfortunately.
Or nobody knew how to turn it on.
The best laid plans.
It took like 3-4 days for some of the commercial stations to get back up up and running. All of the TV stations mostly were on, but that takes big-time electrical power to run a TV.
Correct.
Not too many battery-operated TVs around these days. But
and, again, you don't know what the cable stations are going to be either, if the cable providers will be in
business. So small portable radio would be good idea.
We do appreciate your community service as far as passing along those warnings. We will certainly get that information over to you as needed.
Appreciate that. We've had a great hour talking to Bob Ankrap, who is the emergency manager and public information officer in Dearborn Heights. A lot of these things apply to right here in Dearborn and other communities, if you've been listening to it. And there's information on the Dearborn Heights government website, which just, as I said, search for Dearborn Heights, and it'll pop up and look for the either under the CERT program is how I got the connection to most of these things, but it's all there on the website. So, Bob, thank you very much for coming on the Tuesday Journal and WHFR Dearborn today.
Thank you.
And,
enjoyed it.
I hope we don't have to talk to you in the future about disasters that are actually happening, but we want to share as much information as possible, so keep us on your email list.
Certainly. And, G, one thing I want to pass along to you, if any of our residents out there are interested in any of this type of information, please don't hesitate to give me a call. I'm based over at the Dearborn Heights Police Department. Again, that number is 313-277-7405. Be glad to sit down with you and go over some of your own personal plans, provide whatever help I can.
I appreciate your coming on the show today very much. So stay tuned to a great show of